Hi, I'm Vernon Trawler for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Cheryl Donnelly, CEO of the British Contact Lens Association. Where did you grow up?
I grew up about 25 miles north of Birmingham in the middle of the UK. So, so that's a very boring place, really, Birmingham. Although, having said that, there is a very good one of the original optometry colleges at Aston University. That's not that far away, yeah.
What did your parents do?
My father was European marketing manager for Rover, and it used to be known as British Leyland in those days. So he was that's what he did. Mum, although she was at a biologist originally before she had me, and then she spent many years bringing up the family. So sort of a series of part-time jobs and bringing up the kids, really, which is probably no mean feat as there are three of us.
Know how that goes. What got you into opticianry?
Oh my goodness, it's a really long, long, boring story. So it comes back to getting my grades to go into university, and I didn't quite get the grades I was supposed to do, which is really bad. And in fact, I was working in on a Saturday, like most kids of my age while we were at college, as a Saturday girl in Boots the Chemist, which is a big, in fact, I guess that has some relations with Walgreens.
Yeah, it's kind of a pharmacist all in one box.
Yeah, so it's a huge chain of pharmacies here in the UK. Now, bizarrely, I was a Saturday girl working on the stationery department, selling Dragons and ZX Spectrums. Do you remember? That's how old
now,
I am.
Now I looked up the ZX Spectrums. Now those were like little 84, 64-bit computers, but they only marketed in the UK. What the heck were Dragons?
So this, I mean, the Spectrum was quite a sexy black little computer. The Dragon was made by somebody else, and that was huge.
Oh, okay.
But I knew nothing. Yeah, so now that was, I was selling scientific calculators, fountain pens, and these little home computers. But anyway, what happened was I didn't get the grades I was supposed to get. And the HR lady in the store said, I've got the thing for you. She said, we're opening an opticians. And she said, you retake your exams. How about you come and work as a receptionist for us? It was the second Boots opticians to open. The first one was in its home office of Nottingham, and the second one was in Birmingham. And so that was my introduction to the world of optometry. I was a receptionist, and I learned to do, and it was a very long time ago, so it really was a very demarked role in those days where you literally did reception duties. And I worked with people and just thought, I could do that. So that's what I did. I went off and trained as a display optician, and then wanted to do contact lenses, and so then carried on my education and qualified as a contact lens optician, I think in 1983. Can't remember. But no, quite a quirky thing, really. And actually, a lot of the colleagues that I speak to that didn't do the optometry route and did dispensing optics often fell into it or observed at a distance and thought, I like this. And yes, so that's how I fell into it. It's quite interesting how everything happens for a reason.
Now, I read that you considered optometry at Aston University.
I did, okay. Yes.
So why stick with opticianry and why contact lenses?
I was really lucky to be teaching the undergrads dispensing at Aston University, because I was living not far away. And I wanted to do more. I wanted to give back more. And I thought a good way of doing that was to teach the undergrads. And also, all the time, I kept thinking, should I be an optometrist? Should I go and do that? But I'd also got a fabulous day job. I was working for a very large chain, probably one of the largest many years ago, called Dolland & Acheson. And within that role, I was contact lens product manager and training manager for all of the optometrists and the pre-regs. And I had a great time because I was able to do so many things and also teach at the university. And I just thought if I gave all that up and went and did optometry, I just felt that I was in a really, really fabulous position doing all of this other stuff. And if I did optometry, I may end up only being in a consulting room. And whilst that has its great advantages, for me, I felt that I was able to give a lot more back to the youngsters by doing what I was doing. So it was quite a tough decision not to do optometry at Aston, but that, I didn't do that. That was the reason, because I was able to do all of this other stuff too.
How did you get from clinical care to association director?
While I was doing this role at Dolland & Acheson, which was I was part of the team that brought in the UK actually something called contact lenses by post, which meant that you still had that clinical care, but patients who are wanting convenience, we were sending their lenses home. So it was home delivery, very, very new and innovative thing. I was working and I really learned a lot at Dolland & Acheson. It was a corporate environment. We had about 700 stores. I was responsible for teaching and commercial products that we sold. And I was learning so much. But I just felt that somebody had approached me and said, do you know what? It might be time for you to go and work in industry. I moved to Alcon in the UK as their professional affairs person. And BCLA was introduced to me probably around that time. And the British Contact Lens Association, if you are really passionate about contact lenses and particularly anterior eye, then the BCLA, certainly in the UK in those days, was the association to be part of. So even as my time at Alcon and then latterly to Bausch & Lomb, the BCLA was really central to my world because my working world and all of my colleagues and peers that I worked with were all in that segment. And so the association began then, I suspect, gosh, I'm trying to think, 15, probably about 20 years ago. Because it's central to everything, you know, if you're interested in contact lenses or anterior surface, then BCLA was an organisation, certainly in the UK, that you were part of. And so my beginning of that association began then. And I then became president of the association in 2000. And it was still there in all my 13 years at Bausch & Lomb. It was still there. And then the timing was right. My time at Bausch & Lomb came to an end, and there was a vacancy at the BCLA for somebody to take up the helm. So the timing was, again, just perfect, really. But I've never, as I say, all of us hold the association quite dear, and it's quite central to what we do every day, whether you're working in it or alongside it, really.
What's something your colleagues don't know about you?
I like bodyboarding, and I used to play the trumpet. My lip is not there anymore, I'm afraid. Uh-huh. I still have it in the loft, and my son, who is quite musical, doesn't seem to have the lip for it either. But no, my favourite thing to do is bodyboard. I love it. So we always go down to Cornwall and North Devon in the UK every summer at least.
Where there are real waves.
Yeah, well, they're nothing like anything over by you, I'm sure. But it's the only thing that I do that I just forget everything. It's great.
Just get in the ocean and ride the waves in.
Love it.
So when did you stop playing the trumpet?
When I left school, really. So I used to play in a jazz orchestra and also a brass band. But now I think you're out of that environment, aren't you? So, yeah, stop then, really.
There's no incentive to keep at it unless you really, really wanted to do it.
No, not really. I've just lived through Tom now. He does all of those things instead of me.
What are the main differences between US and UK optometry?
Wow. I'm not sure. I think there's obvious ones. So, for example, for a US optometrist, you become an OD, and you that also that means that you automatically have a therapeutic license, I believe. Certainly here in the UK, then the what we call independent prescribing, which is probably the equivalent of that therapeutic license, is something that you would have to study to do. And apart from that, I think commercially it's quite different. So I think it's fabulous in the US that you have your doctor's office, and correct me if I'm wrong, the doctor's office next to the retail glasses shop or whatever you call it, which means that in the US, the doctors seem to have managed to retain that professional element. In other words, they're able to welcome a patient into their consulting room and charge for their time, and that is seen to be the right thing to do. I think it's so frustrating here in the UK that we're not able to do that. I think fees, there's only a certain percentage of practitioners here in the UK that will still use that fee-based model, and I think that is a real shame. In the US, you seem to have mastered that very well. And I just wish that we could do more of that here. In other words, charge for the time, charge for the expertise that you're giving your patients every day. I think the UK consumer or patient mindset is one that's quite different. And they don't view eye care as something that they should be paying a professional reasonable fee for. And I think that's the key difference. Also, the fact that you have a very heavily insured system, and of course we're tied down by the old NHS system. So I think clinically, I think that the US and the UK optometrists are on a par, depending on what level of education they've achieved. But I think that the drivers are your insurance system versus our hereditary NHS system, and the fact that you are able to keep that professional charge element going. Which I think you seem to do very well.
Is retail optical a challenge to private practice ODs in Britain?
Well, I think your question therein says it really. Everybody's a private practice, I suppose. So I think the challenge we have in the UK is the multiples. So I guess so we have very large multiples that are very for a very high percentage of contact lens prescribing. So yes, I think we do. We have independent practice and we have a multiple driven practice, and they are quite different. Well, I say they're quite different. At the end of the day, everybody's a qualified clinician. They're giving the same care to our patients. It's just that the way it's done, I suppose, and the sort of practice. Yeah, I think they're just very different, and sadly, we should be working together to try and educate the patient on what's important and what level of patient care you should be receiving, and all of those added things like all of the technology, OCT, fundus photography, dry eye disease management. We should be working together to educate the public rather than fighting amongst ourselves to decide whether we're a multiple or an independent.
So, what do UK ODs want US ODs to know?
Oh, the weather's shocking. I don't know whether a UK optometrist would think that much, whether they would understand a USOD is much different. But I think the UK optometrist would want the American optoms to appreciate that they are just as well qualified, particularly if they take up the IP qualification. And I think that they see the American ODs as having that extra level. And I don't know, is that something that we should be doing differently and giving our undergrads more of a different change in the way we manage things? When you look at what's happening in from a technology perspective, Is the future of optometry going to be more about diagnosis from instrumentation, but more importantly then managing the patient with those diagnostic results, really? And I don't know whether we could learn from the American ODs, because clearly they've been doing that from the undergraduate course that they do. I think that's the thing for us is we're going to have to change, and we're going to have to meet the technology changes and embrace them to make sure that, one, the patient gets a consistent level of care and even better than they do now, but also to be able to engage in the patient and explain what these extra tests are for, or this extra element of technology can do, because we don't have therapeutics as a mainstay within their qualification. I think that's probably what we would like to understand, is how do they integrate that into the practice so successfully? Because that's something that we are starting to do with dry eye disease management, shared care for glaucoma and diabetic retinopathy. But the US doctors have been doing that for some time. So I think that sharing of the knowledge and how they get the practice to work would be really useful.
Why should US ODs join the BCLA?
So our vision and mission is all about education. And I think that whilst we're British, and that's obviously where we were, we began 40 years ago in somebody's bedroom. That sounds good, doesn't it? We now have, I would have said, about 40% international members. So we are quite an international organisation. And I think the challenge is that we're British. Well, yes, we're based here and we began here, but we would like to think that we do have an international reach. So we held a meeting in Hong Kong in 2016. We run the research track at the Netherlands Contact Lens Congress. And we welcome 50% of our BCLA clinical conference attendees are from overseas. So we are the only association that will focus on contact lens and anterior eye. There are many others. And of course, we also have the journal related to that. So I think that because we're the only people that focus just on that element, there must be something that we can do to educate people and to share the latest research from the journal, as well as from our clinical conference. We welcome many Americans to our meeting. And in fact, a lot of them are globally renowned, and we always welcome them to join to share their experience. Because you have vast patient numbers, vast country, and a vast wealth of experience to share, where we can try and learn from you. Alternatively to that, it's the only association that will support contact lenses and anterior eye, and hopefully bring people up to date, certainly from the clinical conference every 2 years.
What's your guilty pleasure food?
I have lots. That's terrible. I think it probably has to be cheese, particularly melted camembert with a drizzle of oil and a little bit of rosemary baked in the oven. Ooh. With a fresh bit of baguette. I think that's probably what it is.
I'm going to suggest that to my nephew, who's an executive chef. actually, you're the second person I've interviewed who has said cheese.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, it's really bad for us, isn't it? There's loads of things I could say, but no, I do love a warm baked camembert.
Lovely. Do you have any regrets?
Yes, I do, actually. Well, I don't really regret. If I was my 16-year-old self, I would have studied harder, although I thought I was studying very hard at the time, and I would have done medicine. I would love to have done medicine. You know, I was at a meeting this weekend in London, the European ophthalmologists and the UK ophthalmologists were together for a contact lens and anterior eye meeting, and I regret that. That's my biggest regret, not studying to be an ophthalmologist, and I'm too old now.
What's it about ophthalmology that interests you so? Is just the depth of the practice?
I think it might be that. But also, you know, the amount of there's a consultant ophthalmologist that is our president-elect of the association called Professor Sunhil Shah. And recently he educated me on, he's been doing some charity work in Cambodia, and he was just sharing phenomenal pieces of information on the percentage of people that have an uncorrected refractive error, and purely because nobody's ever looked at them, provided them with a pair of specs. I just feel that I could have made such a massive difference. So, yeah, I guess that's probably what it is. You know, you get embroiled in your own little world, and you think that what we do is good. We try and change people's lives by encouraging practitioners to consider contact lenses as a form of vision correction, as well as their specs, you know, change their lives, and it does change their lives. But I just think that I could have done one stage further if I'd have done ophthalmology, but I'm too old and I probably wasn't bright enough.
Okay. Last question, and we inflict this.
Oh dear, they're very difficult, Vernon. Very difficult.
We have this huge panel that comes up with them. We inflict this one on everybody.
Oh God.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Oh no, I don't know.
Oh, come on, there's always something. On the other hand, you are the CEO of the British Contact Lens Association. So.
Yeah, so I'll have to temper it a little bit, won't I? Oh. I don't think it's the craziest thing I've ever done, but standing in the middle of Red Square in the snow with no coat because I didn't take one with me and left it at home was probably the ridiculous thing I've ever done. But
no coat in Red Square when? What time of year? How did that happen?
That was December.
Of course, yes.
Yeah, of course it was. So, yeah, I even bought one of those pull-down hats and everything to wear. And I left the hat on the aeroplane and left the coat in the taxi. Yeah, but that's a phenomenal place. Have you ever been to Moscow?
No, I'm afraid not.
Oh, you have to go. It's a fabulous place. Oh, and then a mad thing. I remember being in a souk once with a big python around my neck. That was pretty horrible. It was actually part of a clinical meeting, and we all went on a day trip, and we had to sit and eat some really awful delicacies, and then they thought it would be a really good idea to come and put a snake round your neck and take a picture, but I didn't enjoy that. I've travelled, I've done some fabulous things.
What kind of inedible delicacies did they inflict on you?
They wouldn't say. And of course, they get quite offended if you don't eat them. Oh, dear. I'm so sorry. I must be the most boring person you've ever interviewed.
No, far from it. Freezing to death in Moscow in December, and then being draped, having snakes draped on you after, you know, being offered inedibles. That's something that doesn't happen to me every day.
Quite a few of your readers have probably done that. I'll have to have a think on the train on the way home, and if I can think of anything else, I'll let you know.
Okay, that's all the questions I have for you. So thank you for talking with me today.
Well, thank you, Vernon. It's been nice to meet you. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.